This is NPR's All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Noah Adams. 10 years ago, the city of Seattle was at the very center of a new rock and roll genre. It was called grunge. The music was loud, pared down, and largely unrestrained. Hundreds of garage bands formed in Seattle over a very short period of time. One of those bands, Nirvana, achieved success with their first major single, Smells Like Teen Spirit. That song, the band, and its lead singer, Kurt Cobain, would come to represent the genre. Smells Like Teen Spirit is part of the NPR 100, our list of the most significant pieces of American music of the 20th century. NPR's Guy Raz has the story.
By the time Nirvana started playing in the small clubs around Pioneer Square in Seattle, pop music was witnessing the decline of the highly produced, synthesized sound. Still, if you tuned into any big city alternative radio station in 1990, chances were you'd hear this song by New Order. At that time, rock subgenres were pretty one-dimensional. Heavy metal was loud. The so-called alternative bands from England cranked out such earnest tunes, critics called the style New Romantic music. And American punk, while still vital, wasn't commercially viable. In 1991, all that was about to change. Nirvana performed a version of Smells Like Teen Spirit in front of a small crowd at the OK Hotel in Seattle. Jonathan Poneman, co-founder of Sub Pop Records, was there.
It started off with that chord progression, and it went into a really beautiful, almost dreamy verse. They went into the bridge, which seemed to be leading to something. I mean, there was this tension in the bridge. It's hard to explain. But then it erupted into this chorus, and it was really a jaw-dropping experience. I believe that everybody in the room knew that they were listening to something that was truly magnificent.
Smells Like Teen Spirit became an unlikely hit. It wasn't a track designed to be marketable or even accessible. Check out the pop charts in 1991, and you'll find artists like Paula Abdul, Color Me Bad, Mariah Carey, all dominating the top 20. It's the kind of music that parents could listen to with their kids. But Smells Like Teen Spirit was a song that parents were going to hate. It didn't make sense. You couldn't understand the words. And the chorus sounded like shouting. Nevermind, the album that included this song, reached the top of the charts. Most ironic is that the very demographic Smells Like Teen Spirit appeals to, the so-called slacker generation, is the subject of ridicule in the song. Singer Kurt Cobain observes his generation as overboard and self-assured. The refrain shouts, "Here we are now, entertain us." Nirvana crafted a cynical video to accompany the track that showed the band playing background music for a truly spirited high school cheerleading squad. Almost instantly, the song was embraced as a crossover anthem. It appealed to the football players and cheerleaders just as much as it did to the angst-ridden teenage punks. You could interpret it as a generation's call to arms or a simple, loud rock song. And despite massive commercial success, Nirvana managed to maintain its credibility by posing as anti-rock stars. The first time the band was featured on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine, Kurt Cobain wore a shirt that read, "Corporate rock mags still suck." Again, Sub Pop's Jonathan Poneman.
There have been a lot of great and popular guitar rock bands, but there was always a feeling or a suspicion that their careers were somehow manufactured. Nirvana was the real deal. I mean, in a very short period of time, they went from playing for 8 people at a small tavern in the Pioneer Square district of Seattle to playing the Coliseum. And they did it on their own terms.
And their own terms were simple. Nirvana was part of a movement that believed anyone could produce music. Neither money nor connections or even talent were prerequisites. But for all their anti-corporate rock credentials, Nirvana's legacy would have a very corporate impact on alternative rock. With their success, record companies turned grunge into one of the most profitable and best-selling rock subgenres. Indeed, the acts that dominate the charts today, Korn, Limp Bizkit, Marilyn Manson, pose as anti-rock stars and, at the same time, make a lot of money doing it. Guy Raz, NPR News, Washington.